Welcome to Untamed Blossoms, the podcast where we celebrate the untamed journey of womanhood. Here, we tell the stories of incredible women who have embraced their authenticity, inspiring others to do the same.
From entrepreneurs to artists, activists to adventurers, we share triumphs, challenges, and the beauty of self-discovery. These are the stories of women blazing their own trails, breaking free, and blooming unapologetically.
Join us to connect, be inspired, and celebrate the power of women's stories. Together, let's rewrite the rules and embrace our wildness.
Welcome to Untamed Blossoms. I'm your host, Amanda Riley.
And I'm Christy Riley. Welcome to the show.
I just was getting done saying, I know you've been really busy today too.
Yes.
But it has, I mean, the fact that there is an eclipse, there was a lunar eclipse last night and a full moon tonight, and it's all in Virgo is like, how much can I fit into one day?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, Sam was like, so what's your day look like today? And I'm like, nuts.
Crazy.
I'm insane. And yes, you have that. On top of that, like if you would see my house right now, you guys, if you would see the farm currently, it is, is what you're saying in life, like in real life form outside.
It is the actual simulation of a Virgo outside.
Oh my God.
Trucks. Haulers. I don't know what those things are called.
There's food trucks. So there's restaurant equipment because we're restaurateurs. There's food trucks. There's smokers that are that have come back to us. We sold them and somehow they miraculously re-arrived. And then we are doing our driveway because we really needed to do our driveway. It's very muddy and because we have events here, parking becomes an issue. So that's got started earlier this week, and finally some guy showed up to rescue us because we didn't know what we were doing and didn't really have the right equipment, and now he's fixing it for us. But we thought it was all going to be done before you know, our 18-year-old is having a big celebration with her friends for graduation tonight and like their last hurrah, and there's going to be like 60 kids here. And like, I'm like, where's everybody going to park?
Yeah.
So it's crazy here. There's stuff everywhere. We're trying to get it organized before the party, but it is literally, it looks like insane people live here outside today.
Chaotic time. It's chaotic time.
I feel that in my soul. I'm not doing well with it. I'm not doing well with this chaos energy. It's causing me to be really.
I wonder, maybe we could ask Sarah this. We're having a full moon circle tonight also on top of everything else. I wonder if it's like because we have Sagittarius placements, we do like chaos, like we're fine with it. But the richness of Virgo season, especially being in an eclipse in a full moon like this, like back to back, I wonder if there's some of that extra energy of like needing things to go perfectly the way you expect, like want them to be.
Yeah.
That normally I feel like you and I are much more like go with the flow, who cares, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's the energy of Virgo that's like, well, what the fuck?
Right.
This is not what I had imagined.
It's like chaos. And while you're totally right, I am totally okay with some amount of chaos. It has to be controlled chaos.
Right.
And this feels a little out of control.
Or fun chaos.
Yeah. Fun chaos is fine.
Right. But when it's like a lot of moving pieces, uncertainty, like trying to control what you can control, it's just, it can be too much.
Yeah. I'm feeling that today. And I didn't get up in time to come to the gym. Amanda and I go to the gym together and totally slept through every alarm. Dog slept an hour and a half past where he normally would always get, I mean, like clockwork, get us up to eat. Didn't do it. My husband is always up very, very early. Slept until almost 8 this morning. Like, it was nuts today. Nuts. But I'm glad to be here.
And another
news. This is my favorite part of the day.
It's beautiful.
80 degrees today in Ohio in March.
Wow.
Yes.
Crazy.
I do feel like my mood the last 3 days, you guys, has been nice and sunshiny here in Ohio the last 3 days. My mood has so dramatically changed as far as like just feeling like human again. I really am a true sun sign in that when the sun is gone for too long, it drains my soul.
Yeah. Today, for the first time in a long time, I got sweaty while I was helping stage a house. And I was like,
yeah. Feel the same way. Yeah.
I was like, this is a good problem to have.
Yeah. So. I've been outside all day, every day, all week.
I love that.
Yeah. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
And then we're going to, it's so interesting how when things astrology wise are really crazy, then the weather suddenly does the same thing. Like it's going to start being incredibly windy tonight.
Right.
And then potentially a ton of rain.
Yes.
Or storms.
Correct.
Which I'm not here for.
Right. You don't like this.
I hate storms. Over the next 24 hours. So it's going to be a wild ride.
Yeah. And then the temperature drops again. It's not quite so warm on Sunday, but it's okay. I'll take 60 degrees in March. I'm fine with that and sunny. If it stays sunny, I'm fine with that. It doesn't have to be 80 degrees, but I just need to be outside a little more. But I've been grateful for these last few days. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Today I'm so excited. Chrissy Smith will be on the podcast today. Yes. She was a guest early in our podcasting career. And what is today? The 14th. So I think either the 15th or the 16th. I can't remember which day is her actual 2-year soberversary.
Right. Right.
So Chrissy,
and we're very proud of her.
So proud of her.
Yeah.
Chrissy and I were the original club bangers together. We tore up this town.
You guys would tear up and be the last ones standing.
Always.
Always.
We booed people at a wedding once as they were leaving to go to bed. So if that tells you anything about our drinking career together, it was long and successful.
Yes. Yes.
But
you took the reins first and then she followed suit after you did. Not too long after you did.
Yep. I think really I got sober. Well, I did get sober in November after a wedding bender, as you all know. And I remember going to exchange gifts with her in December and asking if we could meet at a coffee shop instead of a bar. We always met at a bar. And remember like being anxious about that because like I knew we weren't going to have a long night
because
we're meeting at a coffee place.
Right.
And, you know, I'll let her tell it. But I definitely know that she felt my vibe that evening of like, what is this friendship going to look like when I'm desperately trying to stay sober?
Right.
And all of our shenanigans have been really connected to drinking culture. So, you know, like I would say that was in December, January or February. She like started, you know, talking to me about it a little bit. And then she got sober in March.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And then your friendship, you know, although it got tense is not the word, but you could feel the shift, right? It's like what this is going to be if one of us drinks and the other one doesn't, because it's been so heavily focused on drinking this whole time.
Yeah.
That you guys navigated, I feel like, and Chrissy and you and I, we've been doing so much work this last year on ourselves and growth and really working on ourselves and being introspective, that you guys have navigated your friendship in such a beautiful way and really been mirrors to each other in certain ways on how you're showing up in relationship and what that looks like and how to have communication about that to fix it and or put your own boundaries in place to make sure you feel good in that relationship. Yeah. And you guys have really done a lot of beautiful work in your relationship to make sure that this long-standing friendship that you've had since college stayed steady.
Yeah.
And that's really beautiful.
16 years is a long time.
Yeah.
For any friendship, I feel like. And when you grow and change, it can be really, really tricky. And getting sober is a huge, can be a huge trigger for friendships and ending.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Usually that's the case. I feel like your drinking buddies don't make it past your first few AA meetings, you know, you're like, we can't hang out.
Yeah.
So if you're following those kind of models, right? Totally. That's what they tell you.
Even if you're not, even if you're just going rogue and doing whatever you have to, you just realize that like, I will either make it with this person because they're going to have to adjust or they don't want to adjust to me. And that's also okay. But we can't do the same things that we were doing.
Right.
So.
Right. We have to find new grounds.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to hear Chrissy's story. She's going to tell us all about her 2-year sobriety and the ins and outs of it and what she's learned along the way.
Totally. Hello, Chrissy. Welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me back.
Welcome. Yeah. I love your lipstick.
Thank you.
You look beautiful.
I wore this on my wedding day.
Nice. Ooh.
It matches the Untamed Blossoms neon sign. Also.
I know. I love that.
And the pink.
And it.
So were you.
You love our new uniforms?
I do. I do.
This is how we can just not give a shit what we wear every time we record.
Yeah.
Love it. Which is great.
Nice. We do have another pair.
We do.
I did try them on today to wear here.
Weren't feeling it?
I was feeling it was a little too loose, a little too wild. It's funny when we first started recording, when Chrissy got here, I had her sit in this chair. And the sun beaming in through here. And Chrissy was so white looking, she was translucent. And I said,
it's a ghost.
Not a good look.
You deserve that chair.
Put you in the middle seat.
The ghost of drinking
text. Oh, that's a title of this episode.
I think you just named it.
Yeah. Well, Christy and I just did an intro for you, Chrissy. And before we get started, like, you know, obviously we'll talk about your story and congratulate you on your very upcoming 2-year soberversary.
Yay!
I did want to see if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit before we start. We'll go way back. But remember when we exchanged Christmas gifts right after I got sober?
Yes.
Okay. I'm glad you had that reaction. So I told Christy, I said, that was my first worry that our friendship may crumble during my sobriety because I felt like, God, this is going to be so boring for her to sit here. We have never exchanged gifts in a coffee shop. What if, like, this is – I remember getting in my car, starting to panic, like, what if this is the end? So What was your – like, how did you feel during that interaction?
So it's really funny because I feel like it's a good reflection of how self-centered I was when I was drinking because you stopped drinking in November. I, like, forgot that you weren't drinking. Like, we met at Java. And I was like, oh, yeah. And it was fine. Like, for me, I was like, oh, it's fine. I remember it was a very chaotic time in my life. So I remember there was a lot going on. And I remember, like, basically trauma dumping on you the whole time. Now that I think about it, I'm like, that was a great Christmas gift. I was like, hey, here's a pair of socks. And would you like to have a therapy session with me for me? But I do remember it wasn't then. There was another time when you came to my house and we were like watching the UFC fights or something.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, being very self-conscious about myself drinking. Like, it was the first time that I had really realized, like, oh, there's a difference here in our relationship and just like what we talk about or don't talk about or just like how we were connecting. So I can like picture where we were sitting at Java because it was very busy and we never sit where we were. We were like
never in by the window
walk-through area.
Yeah,
I remember that distinctly.
It's when you stop drinking and you are still maintaining those friendships that were really saturated in, like, you drank together. That's what you did together. That first, like, separation when you do something very different, and for us doing that was very different, I just started to be like, oh, God. Mm-hmm. Like, she's never going to want to continue just meeting at a coffee shop, which is funny because now that's all we do.
Yeah. 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 I also think I when we would hang out, I would be more sober curious. So I remember we went out for a friend's birthday, just the three of us. And the first place we went to, I didn't drink at all.
Yeah.
And there was another time, when you came to my house, you had brought some NA drinks. And I remember I was like, oh, can I try one of those?
Yeah.
So I like tried to toe the line, like I'm going to be a good friend and not drink while Riley's here.
Right.
And then, you know, an hour would pass and I'd be like, I did my good deed for the day. I'm done.
You're like, I did have a non-alcoholic beer and now I'll have a real one.
Exactly. I'm like, got a little lavender taste in my mouth. I'll follow it up with Bud Light. Just what I'd always wanted.
I just remember Amanda being really worried about all of her friendships because all of them really from college were born of you being in this space of, and not you weren't friends because of drinking, but it was a big part of all of your lives, right? And so how is this going to play now to hang out with all of my friends and I'm the only one choosing not to drink, you know? Right. And how is that going to feel? How are they going to perceive me? What is that? And that's a real struggle, I think, with everyone. I'm sure you are going to talk about this in your story is, how do you navigate those friendships? And we just talked in the intro, most of those don't make it. If you go to AA and these meetings, they tell you, you have to stop hanging out with people that drink, right? Yeah. Like they're going to mm-hmm. trigger you to want to do it again. And so it's hard to maintain those friendships. And I have to say that for the most part, most of yours have maintained intact.
Yeah.
Right. Like totally. Most of your friendship group has maintained intact through this transition for the both of you. And I think that's speaks loudly about the two of you.
Well, really. We talked about this. We were the
problem. Yeah. I'm like, let's be clear here. We made fun of people when they quit drinking.
I talked to her about the booing people leaving a wedding to go to sleep.
I mean, we were
the last people standing.
Yeah, it was us.
We were the problem.
Yeah. The call was coming from inside the house. And that has been my major reflection, I think, is just knowing that for me, I had to be able to say that's what I believed was true when I thought this. And now that I know that's not true, this is what I believe. And being able to you can change your mind. Like you can take back something you say. Yeah. And so I think so many people are afraid to say I was wrong, but if I booed you when you left a wedding or any event, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Yeah. If you said you weren't drinking and I gave you a hard time, I apologize. I was wrong.
Yeah.
But I think it's hard for people to do that. And that was one of the hardest things is knowing, well, I've said all of these things and done all of these things. And so if I
now I'm going to seem like a hypocrite.
Yeah. If I quit drinking, what does that mean? It's like, well, it means you changed.
Yeah.
So you are a human.
Yeah.
And you learned something new and you took it in and you made a change.
Yeah.
Yeah. You grew. You went through a growth pattern, you know? And I think that's the biggest thing is you, when you learn about something that's not serving you, you change it.
Yeah.
And for some people's relationship with alcohol, we've talked about this before, the relationship with alcohol is not something that's not, it's detrimental to them, although I might argue, but it's not hurting them in such a way that they're choosing to change it, right? But once you realize it's not really serving you, we change paths, change course. Yeah.
Your sober anniversary is on the 16th. The last time you drank was on the 16th of March, which then leads me into St. Patrick's Day is coming up. Since we are literally a few days away, it'll be on Monday, which then brings me to tradition, right? And all the things that we do and celebrate and how alcohol centers so much of that. And maybe take it further even back than just like celebration. You're a kid and you're looking around and you're watching barbecues happen. You're watching birthdays, celebrations, Christmas. You name what event it is and people are bringing alcohol and you see from a very early age, to celebrate or this specific holiday, the adults get drunk. So I would love to know if you could take us back, like little Chrissy, what was your first experience with alcohol? When did you notice people were drinking it? And then what feelings did that invoke for you?
Yeah. So alcohol has really always been a part of my life. I was thinking about this today, and the first time I ever drank alcohol, it was before I went to school. So my grandma was an alcoholic when my mom was younger, and she stopped drinking a few years before I was born. My grandpa would still drink, but he drank, you know, he had a schedule of drinking. He was the guy that would like go to work and do all the things and, you know, work on the house and watch TV. And then at 7 p.m. every night, he would drink his beer and his wild Irish rose wine and mix them together. And then he'd, you know, get hammered and go down the basement and go to sleep for the night where, you know, where he slept. And so I remember him always drinking regularly. But I had a very close relationship with him, and he always drank out of the Cincinnati Reds cup. And one day when he was babysitting me, I thought it was mine. He had two of the same cup, and I used to love to drink out of this cup because it was like I was being like him. And it was beer. And I remember as soon as I took the drink, I spit it into the ashtray that was right in front of me. And I kept joking, like, I thought that was apple juice. And I was little. I mean, like I spit it out.
Right.
I was like, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
Which is probably what I would do now, actually, if I'm reflecting. And so, yeah, that was my first time that I had ever tasted alcohol. And so I was raised by my mom and my stepdad. My dad drank a lot, but I didn't grow up in the house with him. So I knew that he drank a lot. He had gotten some DUIs, so I couldn't ride in the car with him. So alcohol was clearly an issue. And he drinks now, but he only drinks like during football season, which is interesting. But my mom and stepdad, they didn't drink a lot, but when they did, they did. And so weekends of my childhood were going to parties with my parents and all of the adults getting really, really drunk and then driving me home. Mm-hmm. And I remember being little. I say little, but I wasn't that little. I was like fifth grade, fourth grade. I mean, old enough to know what was going on and crying because I knew I was not safe getting in the car with my stepdad driving.
Yeah.
And so when I think back, I didn't connect this until later, but alcohol was always a huge part of my life and what I saw as a child. But I didn't connect that with some of the traumatic things that happened in my life. And there was a point where I looked back and I started really looking at patterns of things. And I was like, oh my gosh, every single traumatic thing that has ever happened to me in my life has somehow involved alcohol. Whether I was drinking, an adult who was supposed to keep me safe was drinking, someone who hurt me was drinking, there's always drinking. And when I realized that, and I'm like paying all this money to go to therapy and, you know, do all these things, I'm like, so I should probably cut that out, you know, if I want to make a change. But then there was a point where my parents bought a house and the drinking really halted. So it wasn't like every weekend going to, you know, friends or families. There was still drinking, but it was more intermittent. But it was still really big when it would happen. So parties at our house or going somewhere. Again, not frequently, but still memorable. So I grew up in the city. I grew up in Columbus in the Bottoms. We didn't move into the rural area until I graduated from high school. And they moved. So I never actually lived with them. I mean, I'm sure I was in college, so I never actually lived with them in that rural house in the rural, rural area. But yeah, I grew up in Columbus.
Had a room there, a bed there.
But yes, didn't really exactly. But that does bring me to the point of in the area that I grew up in, there was also a lot of drinking. It's a high poverty area. You go to the corner store, someone wants change for alcohol. I mean, there's... You can drive down the neighborhood right now and there are probably people walking down the street drinking 40s right now.
Right.
It's
trying to escape their lives.
Yeah. It's 4 p.m.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was very prevalent. Drinking was always very prevalent.
Yeah.
I would say there was always some type of alcohol in our house. But I didn't really, then after I tried it that one time, I didn't really drink again until I was like 18.
Well, so you didn't have like the inclination or the peer pressure from your friends to like go have like parties in high school early or.
So my parents were very strict. So I wouldn't say that I didn't get pressured. It was more of like I couldn't.
Yeah.
So I remember being really afraid of getting in trouble too. So I was always like, I was just the goody two shoes. Like, sorry, guys. Can't do it.
Yeah.
When I think about St. Patrick's Day, though, it's kind of funny because when I was a senior in high school, I was working on a project with three of my friends, and it happened to be St. Patrick's Day. We were filming a project, and we went downtown to film it, and it was on St. Patrick's Day, and I had to be home by like 10 p.m. or something, and so did my other friend, Michael, and it's actually, he passed away. Today is 16 years since he passed away, so it's like kind of weird that all these things are like coming up today, but our parents were so mad. His parents and my parents were like calling and leaving both of us voicemails like, you need to get home right now. It's not safe. It's St. Patrick's Day. You're out downtown. And we were legitimately working on a school project. But when I think about that now, I'm like, we were downtown at 10 p.m. on St. Patrick's Day filming a video for AP history class.
And you were what, 17?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was bold and terrifying.
I don't know why. Like, think about that now and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you didn't really drink in high school, and, you know, your parents and the way they raised you kind of put that fear in you, but you leave.
Go to college.
You go to college. Then what? I mean, I know what happened, but tell everybody what.
You were witnessing.
You saw many things happen. Yeah, so I left for college, and my first weekend there, I make friends, and I go to a party, like my first night there. And so when I left for college, my grandpa was dying. Like, it was going to be any day that he passed away. And so I was like, I'm not leaving this weekend. It was like a big thing. So I ended up leaving anyway. And that night, I went out. And I went to your dorm room, actually. And I remember just being like, wow, everybody likes me. And like, I don't feel like self-conscious about anything. I'm just like, I was able to let loose and have fun and not worry about anything, because I was always like very anxious.
Yeah.
And there was a point where my friend and I, who I had recently met, you were like sitting across the room on a couch, and you were like, hey, you two, come here. We like come over, and you're like, chug this. And like, she hands both of us a beer. And
I was trying to be welcoming.
Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, I've never like chugged a beer before, but I wasn't going to say that. I'm like, okay, cool. So I start chugging. And first of all, I grew up in a high control environment. So you give me a direction, I will do it. I am a people pleaser. So the girl with me ended up throwing up on her pants, and I did.
Immediately afterwards.
Yeah. So I think that that's really when you liked me, was I didn't throw up.
She didn't even puke.
Yeah. I didn't even puke.
The girl puked immediately.
And then at the end of the night, everyone was like sitting in a circle. And I just remember I held up my beer and like was trying to cheers or something. And I dropped it and it spilled everywhere. And everyone was like, I'm adding her on Facebook. And I was like, this is all I have to do to get friends.
Yeah. And it was the first time that no one other than me was bossing you or telling you what to do.
Yeah.
Or like, you didn't have to like worry about if you said or did the wrong thing. People were going to send you to your room, or you know what I mean? Like, you were just able to do whatever you wanted.
That was your first taste of freedom. You know, that's what happens when you go off to college. It's your first taste of real autonomy without any adults really, obviously, unless you do something and somebody's calling the police, but really no adults to be like, you shouldn't. Did you come home? And where are you at? And who are you talking to? What are you doing? You know, and you're in a relatively safe environment, actually. Where you guys went to college was a very safe place, I remember, right? So, you know, you're in a safe environment. The environment around you is not unsafe. So you can kind of be who you want to be and let loose and have fun.
It was also 2006. Yeah. So like when I got to college, I didn't have text messaging. So no one could be like my parents couldn't be calling me constantly, figuring out what I was doing. I mean, I was really like off the grid.
Yeah.
So it was definitely my first taste. But when I look back, I would have never described that as like, oh, my parents were so strict. And when I went to college, I like went crazy. I would have never described it that way, because in my mind, I just did what everyone else was doing. And there were people that did way crazier shit than I did.
Yeah.
So I was like,
we also were in a dorm room that entire night.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We dressed up. Chrissy was wearing yellow heels, by the way. We'll never forget it. It was a whole thing. Because the next
you'll
morning,
never catch me in heels again.
The next morning I wake up and there's Chrissy, mummy pose style, on my couch with our heels hanging off the couch, sleeping. And I think that was what was scary and fun and weird all at the same time about going to a small liberal arts college like that is that you didn't, I mean, we did go to bars eventually, but man, most of it was just dorm partying and apartment partying and house partying. You didn't really do that. So it also gave you a false sense of security and safety because you weren't like downtown Columbus. And with you growing up so close to the city and being in dangerous environments, being in Tiffin, Ohio in a dorm room was pretty safe.
Right? I mean, it was like for the first time in my life, I wasn't trying to stay alive.
Right.
I mean, truly. I grew up in a neighborhood where every single thing I did, I mean, to this day, when I open my car door, I lock it as I'm getting inside. Like there are certain things that innately I just do because of the way I grew up and having to actually be afraid that someone might kill me.
Yeah.
And so I go off to college on this like small rural town and I'm like, oh, yeah, I mean, come on. Like,
yeah,
I couldn't even walk down the street by myself at home.
Yeah.
Per my parents, because they were very strict. Although it was not a great neighborhood. So, yeah. I mean, I understand why.
So you guys, we know from Amanda's story that you guys had a great, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. From what we remember.
Yeah.
From what you can recall.
From what you can recall.
Right.
At what point did you decide that this was... Was it really through therapy or was it one last time drinking that?
So it's funny because we talked about this morning and I was like, when I quit drinking, I didn't think I was quitting drinking.
Yeah.
I didn't think that at all. So Amanda had stopped drinking in November. And as we continued hanging out, our other friend, Brittany, who's also been on the pod before, she quit drinking probably a year before you did, mm-hmm. or 2 years?
A year.
And she still went to everything. Like, she's still at your bachelorette party, was like in the hot tub hanging out with us. She wasn't drinking. And so I remember when you quit drinking, I was telling myself, like, well, Brittany still came to everything. So, like, it's fine. I'm still friends with Brittany. And then I slowly started to realize, like, oh, yeah, no, this is like different because I noticed that you were posting about not drinking more and you were sharing things about it. And I remember telling my now husband, like, yeah, Riley quit drinking. And at this time, he and I were both drinking. And I was like, she keeps sharing stuff about it. And he was like, why? And I was like, well, probably the same reason we all need to quit drinking. But at that time, I was just saying it generally. Like, we all know that that this isn't great for us.
Not good for you.
Yeah. I mean, in general, everyone knows when you drink an alcoholic beverage,
right.
It's not great for you.
Right.
There was never a time where I drank an alcoholic beverage and thought, I'm the pillar of health and wellness. Like,
yeah.
You know,
this is so good for my liver and my brain.
Yeah. You know, I mean, as I'm like, oh my gosh, what if I die of cirrhosis of the liver at 27, you know? And so, I just kind of said that flippantly. And then I was like, but I don't get like the whole, you know, making it your whole personality or something. Like, that's not what I said exactly. But I remember being like, you know, and I think about that now. And that was because I was insecure because I didn't want to see what you were posting because I didn't want to think about if this applies to me.
Yeah.
So
it's like anything else, right? The thing that bothers you the most about other people is a thing that you're avoiding within yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I knew that to some extent because I thought, I'm no different. We're like, I don't want to say we're the same person, but we are very much alike. And now that I'm not drinking, I'm sure people think that about me as well.
Yeah.
But now that I'm not drinking, I understand why. And I understand, you know, the light bulb that goes off when you realize how much you're harming your brain and your body.
But there's that pivotal moment. And I want you to talk about that where you're like you said, you're like, okay, I don't want to say I'm sober right now, like, but I am going to stop. So tell us about that, like that mm-hmm. day that you're like, okay, this is enough for me. And then like that little time afterwards where you're just like not really sure, because that's like a really weird fucking time.
Yeah. So I remember, so there are a couple things that happened. So I was at a time in my life where, so 2023, say January 2023, because I quit in March,
yeah,
was a very, from January to March, very tumultuous time in my life. I just had a lot of family stuff happening and just relationship issues in lots of relationships in my life. And I was drinking very heavily, very often.
And you had a side hustle too, which really promoted
a lot of
that chaos.
Yes. I was also in an MLM. Forgive me. And I was very much on.
Forgive us all.
Yeah. Forgive us all. Look at the three of them right now. Yeah, I was very much on it, on the hamster wheel, and couldn't figure out. I didn't want to get off. I just wanted to figure out how to manage the wheel. Like I was like, life is chaotic, and I hate my job. I was in the classroom at the time teaching second grade. I felt very overwhelmed all the time. It was almost as if I had just come off of special assignment for 2 years where I was developing workshops for teachers and leading workshops for teachers. And it was very much a calm career path comparatively, because when you're a teacher, specifically
second graders, are you kidding?
I mean, it's like you're wiping.
It's like throwing you into the trenches. Like
you're in the trenches, wiping noses, doing all the things. And I knew that I was not the way I needed to be there for my students emotionally and mentally. I was doing that because I knew that's what I needed to do, but then I wasn't able to do that for myself. So I was going to work every day giving everything I had. And then I just decided, okay, then I will just not do any work at home. Like that was my solution. Well, then I realized that teaching is an impossible job if you decide you're only going to do it during the hours that they pay you,
right?
Despite what people might think. So to do it well, it does take preparation and, you know, thinking about what you do outside of the 8 hours you're there. And I talked to you about it and you were like, you know, take action for 30 days and just see what happens. So I naturally started applying for every job I could find, right? That's me taking action. I'm like, all right, new job. And you also
and said, meanwhile, I'm drinking myself into oblivion every night.
Yeah, seriously. And but you never suggested that I quit drinking.
No, that wouldn't work from a very personal
standpoint. Like you were never like, you know what? You might want to think about you know, how you're hungover every day. I was just like, okay, I'll start taking action. But you also said something else that was really impactful to me, because I kept thinking, I can't quit this job because this is like what I do. Before COVID, I had made teaching my entire personality. I mean, it was who I was. It was what I did. I mean, literally people called me drunk teacher, not people who knew me professionally. Because I think people who knew me professionally would be very surprised to hear a lot of the things I'm saying right now. Yeah. Because I was very good at being a teacher. I gave everything I could to my kids. I took it very seriously. I spent a lot of time outside of the classroom learning. And I don't want it to seem like I wasn't being a good teacher, because I was. In turn, what I wasn't doing is taking care of myself.
Yeah.
And I was like this, you know, if I change, what if I don't do something meaningful? Like, why does any of this stuff even matter in regards to my MLM I was in? And you said to me, you are the journey. Like, what if you put all of this effort into yourself, and then the way you make a difference is showing up as who you are for people. And I was like, that's weird. But I
remember, but our entire culture has been teaching me my entire life that what I do for a living is who I am.
Yeah.
I'm all wrapped up into this entity that is our careers.
And thankfully, you know, I know a lot of negative things happened during COVID, but one thing that happened for me was I had to figure out what am I that's I'm not a teacher. And then I went on special assignment, so I quite literally was not a teacher anymore. And so I had kind of like 3 years to figure out who I was other than teacher, but I put that personality into more work, like what I did, what I produced, what, you know, what kind of results I could get. And so when you said that to me, I was like, okay, well, like, what would that look like? You know, like
Did you think she had lost her mind when people say stuff like that? Because I feel like when you hear a profound, it's like,
especially from me, your drunk friend from college. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine?
You hear it in the most random place. I feel like this is how I've experienced it. Right? Is that you're totally not expecting it, whether it's from a friend, fucking somebody on a podcast, somebody, a random grocer says something to you, and you're like, wait, and your brain is like scrambled for a minute, mm-hmm. because it's like it's busted you out of your current enamorment, you know, because mm-hmm. we're enamored with what it is here and we can't get outside our own way. And when somebody says something, it's like it busts open a window and you're like, mm-hmm. there's things outside of that, you know, yeah. like outside of our scope, right? And yeah. we just get so stuck in that. And when somebody pops it open, you're like, wait, and you're confused for a minute. And then it's like the most profound shit. Because it literally has busted you out of your bubble. And I think that that's really powerful when that happens, right? Mm-hmm. And but it takes you a minute. And it's not always like it changes your life overnight. You have to really figure out what you're looking at, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I didn't.
Shift the perspective.
I don't think in that moment I knew how impactful that right. was. Yeah, I come back to that a lot when I feel like I'm not, when I can tell that something isn't going the way I want it to go. I just think, am I trying to push this or make this happen? And like, really, I need to come back to me and what I want and who I am, and everything else should come naturally. And I know that sounds really like maybe cliche, but it has been very true for me that if I am focusing on truly what I align with, things feel natural to me. I didn't know at the time that that's what that was going to mean for me. I remember just thinking like, okay, well, what would that look like? And so immediately I'm like, new job. That's what it looks like. Right.
So I will fix this. Nope.
Yeah, I'm like, I got this.
Yeah.
New job. Okay. So I start applying for jobs. Don't get jobs. I had like an interview and I was just like, do I really want to get a new job? And like, start something over, and I'm so overwhelmed with life. What if it's not my job? What if it's just the way I'm living my life? Like, then I started going like, well, what if I make a rash decision and quit this job? And this isn't
even the problem.
Yeah. And so I finally decided that I was going to schedule an appointment with a psychiatrist because I had been on medication since 2020, 2019. And I had started going to therapy, but my therapist retired in 2020. And so I hadn't been back to therapy since. It had been something I'd been saying like, oh, I'm going to get back in. And so I finally scheduled an appointment with a psychiatrist to get my medication figured out because I knew something just wasn't right. And so I told myself, okay, well, I can't quit my job until I meet with a psychiatrist and we get my medicine figured out, because it's not fair to me, to myself, to make a decision like that when I know that maybe my mental health isn't where it needs to be. So I used that to leverage quitting drinking. In my own mind, that's what I used, was that psychiatry appointment, which was in April. It was like mid-April, I think. And so one day, March 16th, I had like the worst day. I remember my husband was out of town for something. I don't even know. And I was on the phone all night long, like hours with different people, just rehashing all the shit in my life. And I'm talking like childhood, just all this stuff. Like I was like playing investigator. And the next day was St. Patrick's Day. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to be a good friend. And tomorrow I'm going to go out with Riley. I know St. Patrick's Day is her favorite holiday. And I'm not going to drink. So I was like, you know.
Yeah. Because I was real, real worried about that.
Yeah.
Because I had stopped drinking in November. So it was my first St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
And I did not want to be sitting at home. I was terrified of having to sit at home. So I like asked literally all my closest friends to please go out with me and not drink.
Yeah.
Because I was terrified.
But I don't even know if you had said, I think you like invited me. And I was like, oh, I'll see how I feel. And then I think I text you late on the 16th and was like, hey, I am going to go with you guys tomorrow. And I'm not going to drink. And I ended up going, and I remember we had a terrible time. Like,
turns out St. Patrick's Day when you're sober is not fun.
Yeah. And I remember we got there, like, we had to work that day. So we got there later, and there was this guy that was like drunk, and I could tell he was trying to antagonize us a little bit. And I do not play that. And so I'm just sitting there, like, wishing that this man would come over and touch my food because I was like ready to lose my whole mind. And I remember thinking like, I hope I don't act like this when I'm drunk. Oh, I absolutely did act like that when I was drunk. But I remember leaving there being like, okay, I enjoyed our time talking and hanging out with each other. We didn't enjoy being at the bar around all of these annoying people. And I remember thinking, like, that wasn't so bad. And the bad part was when I actually sat back and started observing people. And I say this with the most compassion and no judgment because I absolutely have been that person.
Many, many times.
More times than I can count. But I remember thinking, like, I don't ever want to appear this way. And I remember thinking, this guy is trying to be like
Joe Cool.
Yeah. And I don't ever want to be in a situation where someone is treating me like this and I'm so drunk that I don't even know that someone's like trying to antagonize me or steal my food off my plate or.
Well, and the problem with being the ones that are always the drunkest, longest, and fastest, like we were, was that you don't really get to experience drunk culture from that perspective because you're always the ones in it.
Yeah, it was never the DD.
Right.
Like, we were the ones that were like, how can we figure this out so that we contribute enough that we don't have to contribute the responsible things? So
right.
We would contribute by buying the drinks and bringing the hosting. Fun things. And you always hosted. Yeah. And I don't really know what I did. Now that I think about it.
Brought the entertainment.
Brought the entertainment, yeah. But it was very eye-opening. And then I remember saying like, oh, okay, that was even admitting this out loud. That was the first day I had gone full day. I had gone without drinking like 24 hours. And I mean, I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah.
And so once
to backtrack a little bit, you were so stressed about things that you were drinking beers like every single day after work.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, I'm a teacher, so I would leave. Well, I'm not a teacher anymore, but I was then. So I would leave work at my contract time because I decided that's what was going to, you know, solve my problem. I was going to stop working extra. It was the job. It wasn't anything else. It was the job, which I still do stand by. It is very hard to do the job of a second grade teacher without doing any work outside of your contract hours. But I would get home 4:30. And I would crack open a beer and I would start drinking.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't stop drinking until I went to bed.
Yeah.
And that might be 10 p.m. That might be midnight. I might be blacked out. Yeah. I will say one thing that I really knew needed to change was it got to the point where every time I was drinking, I was like blacking out to the point where I could not control my emotions. And this is how I felt overall. I think this is one thing that I forget about that was a real driver for me, was that I felt like I had no control of my emotion regulation. And I was teaching second graders. And like, it was the point where...
While you were drinking or the next day, you mean you couldn't control your emotions? All
both.
The whole time, yeah.
So I would get hammered and then like trauma dump on my husband and not even remember it the next day. And he's like, do you remember telling me XYZ? And I'm like, I told you what? Or I would say, I'm going to tell you this thing that happened. And it is like, I never told anyone. And he's like, okay. And I tell him and he's like, you told me that 3 nights ago. And I'm like, what? So then I start thinking, who else have I told these things to that I haven't even said out loud to myself, but I get drunk and I just
let it go.
Yeah, let it go. So I was watching second graders during the day have trouble regulating their emotions. And I was doing all of the things for them, talking them through it. I was so patient, so kind. And I would think like, I know why they're, I get it. You know, sometimes I want to throw my iPad against the wall. Sometimes I want to crawl under the table and cry until someone talks me out.
It's me a lollipop.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, wow, I can really relate to how they're feeling. So I was very patient and very compassionate as a second grade teacher because
to yourself.
Not to myself, because I wasn't doing that same thing for myself.
Yeah.
I was telling them like, it's okay. If you're sad, you can be sad. If you need to cry, you can cry. But then I wasn't doing those same things.
But when you were under the influence, then suddenly it was the floodgates were opening.
Oh, but just to clarify, when you first decided to go sober, it was sort of a, I'm just going to take a break from alcohol. Is that how you sort of ease yourself into it?
Yes. So I'm glad you brought me back to that. So I thought, okay, I'm not going to quit my job before I meet with this psychiatrist because I can't just quit my job, right? So, but I was at the point where I was like, I will work at Walmart. Like I'll just do it. Like I was at that point where I was like, I just need to make enough money to survive. And if I can make enough money to survive, like, I can do anything. You know, I've always had that mindset. I'm like, I made it out of poverty. I can do anything. I can solve my way out of anything. That's always been my mindset. Well, so then I also decided, you know what? I could not drink until after this appointment, because I knew that if she started asking me about my drinking habits and I'm paying all this money for a psychiatrist, I'm going to have to be honest with her. This isn't like going to urgent care, you know, for a UTI and they say, how often do you drink? And I say like occasionally and they walk out and, you know, the person with me is like, I didn't realize every night is occasional. And I'm like, well, they don't.
Really. I'm a social drinker. Every day.
Yeah.
This happens. I am very social.
Every time I talk.
Isn't it funny how our brains get ahead of ourselves and already you were shameful about your behavior before you even arrived to the point that you were like, wow, I need to reflect on my behavior before I get there because I know it's coming.
Well, and like, I knew. I was like, if she starts asking me about drinking, because I knew that I should not have been drinking on my medication. And I do this because, which I really should not have been drinking on this medication.
Yeah.
But I thought, like anything else I've ever done, being on an antibiotic and quitting it before I'm supposed to, like that's just something they tell you. It's guidance.
It's a suggestion.
It's a suggestion. It's fine. Like it's not like, human.
It's a cue on the label, do not drink while on this medication. Chrissy's like, this is for losers.
It's a
like,
black label.
It's
they're
like
clearly weak.
There's like a skull and crossbones. She's like,
it's basically like
they even met me and Riley. We are trained professionals.
Yeah, they tell you not to get pregnant on Accutane. I'm like, it's fine. I never did take Accutane, but it's the same idea, right? Like the doctor explicitly told me, do not drink on this, and I was like, okay.
You're like, so what? It's causing blackouts every time I drink. So what?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Right. Who cares?
Right.
Turns out I did, because I totally changed my behavior before I met with a psychologist. Yes.
So I was like, I used that though. And that got me through my first 30 days because it was 30 days
later. You had a target.
So I kept telling myself, I'm at least stopping until this point. And I think I knew in the back of my head that it was going to be longer than that, but at least I could hold everyone off for a little bit from asking me questions or, you know, anything. Like, I just didn't want anyone.
This is an easy reason.
Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to a psychiatrist. So like, I shouldn't be drinking on my medication. I'm super responsible and mature. So I'm going to, you know, quit drinking on my medication.
Now, in that 30 days, did you also reflect on other like anxiety? Like, did you start saying like, whoa, some of my other mental health stuff I'm noticing is really popping up now that I'm sober for these 30 days?
I went on a sober vacation not even a week after being sober. So don't recommend that. That was very hard.
With someone who drank.
With someone who was drinking. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, on that vacation specifically.
Correct. So I quickly realized like, ooh, this is
dicey.
This is dicey for me, but also in a way where I'm like, I'm not enjoying the things that I used to enjoy, like sitting at a bar for hours. And my friend from Florida met us at the bar as well. And I remember thinking like, I just don't want to be here. But I also didn't want to say that because I was like, people are drinking and they're having fun because they're drinking. And I remember thinking it was me, like, I'm just not having fun because I'm not drinking. And now I realize I wasn't having fun because I was sitting there staring at people for hours, which is what you do at a bar. And of course, that's not very fun.
Right.
I mean, the whole analogy of time traveling while you're drinking is so serious, because when you're sober and you have to sit somewhere for 2 hours is a very different experience than when you're hammered for 2 hours. That time flies by. You don't know. Mm-mm. Having nothing to do but sit is excruciating when you're sober.
And I saw something the other day, and I know I had heard this before, but it was about blacking out. And it said when you black out, you don't forget what you do. Your brain is not making a memory. And that was like, and I am very like, I had done a lot of work prior to quitting drinking around my mindset and like having a growth mindset. And I am very much so in terms of education on the side of like, have an open mind and be open to new ideas and believe that you can do things and be open to learning. And so I'm like, hold on. I consider myself a pretty intelligent person. You're telling me I'm fucking up my brain?
Yeah.
Like my brain.
Yeah.
That tripped me out.
Yeah.
And I was like, hold on. My brain is what got me out of the hood.
Yeah.
I cannot mess with my brain. Like, I remember just thinking like,
it's my best commodity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, this literally is what I got.
Yeah.
And that freaked me out.
Yeah.
And
so then you start realizing like, oh, what are all these other things that are here?
So then, yes. So then you asked about like my anxiety, and I always had anxiety as a kid. I knew it was never named because I also grew up in a house where my stepdad did not believe in mental health. I don't know how else to say it, but like even depression, anything, he'd be like, that's not real. Let's get it out of your head. It's like, okay. Thanks. So turns out it is real. And when I quit drinking, I realized how bad it was, to the point that I could not stop. I mean, I had ruminating thoughts that I now know were intrusive thoughts, where, and if you don't suffer from intrusive thoughts, you might not be able to understand, but an intrusive thought is different from, oh, what if someone's mad at me? It's like you're driving on the freeway and you're like, oh my gosh, what if I wreck my car right now? What if the car, like, and going through what might happen if you wreck your car and all the things. And for me, it was with everything. And I was like, okay, this isn't.
And you play it out all the way.
Oh, you play
your mind plays it out. That's the intrusive part. Is that it's not that it just pops in your mind like, oh, I hope I don't have a wreck, right? So that I wanted to clarify that because an intrusive thought is really you have the thought and then your brain just plays the entire scenario down the whole how people are going to respond at my funeral.
Yes,
you know, like who's going to be so sad? Like your brain takes you down the entire path of what would happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I realized that I was just having feelings that I hadn't noticed before. Like I would just randomly feel sad. And I'd be like, why do I feel so, like, why am I sad? Or I would feel scared and I'd be like, nothing happened. I'm just like, but it was because I was actually acknowledging, wait, hold on. I feel weird. My body feels weird. What's going on? Oh, I feel scared. Why do I feel scared? And like one of the things I learned is that it is actually in our DNA to be scared and have anxiety because that's to some extent what has kept us alive to this point. If we think about, you know, even caveman days, like a little bit of anxiety is what, you know, keeps you in the cave.
Yeah.
Well, it kept the species alive.
Yeah. You know, and to some extent it has served me. I didn't realize how bad it was until I stopped escaping it. And now I'm like, when I have an intrusive thought that's really bad, like I had a knee injury and that was actually what really, I've had an ongoing knee injury. And if you've never had a psychological sports issue, whoo, man, it's crazy. Because I would imagine that the injury that happened to my knee was happening over and over and over again to the point that I would have like phantom pains, my stomach, like I can feel it in my stomach right now, what it would feel like. And I was like, this isn't normal, to the point that I would start walking weird. Like my husband was like, what are you doing? We're like walking to the store and I'm like, he's like, are you okay? I'm like, you know, I don't think I am.
Like I'm doing something weird with my knee right now.
Yeah, I'm like,
not sure why.
I'm like limping. And he's like, you look like, why are you limping? Why are you now walking with a limp? Yeah. And I'm like, it was me thinking about the injury over and over and over again. And to the point where like, I now know that it's OCD and I would literally like check my knee and I'm working, still working through that in therapy through EMDR. But I would have never realized that had I not stopped drinking, because I'm like, yeah, no wonder I was drinking so much because no thoughts were going through my head. So
it's
now
quiet. It's quiet.
Very quiet. And it might seem like, you know, to tell people, okay, I have OCD, I have anxiety, I have ADHD. And it's not that I recently developed those things. It's that I had been ignoring those things, masking those things with alcohol and other avoidances. And
that's also why you realize some of those relationships you were having were so spiraling and so consuming, and you're like throwing yourself into your work because it wasn't just alcohol. That allowed you to numb enough to then figure out what else to do to avoid everything else.
Oh yeah. And I was a workaholic. Like alcohol and work were my go-to avoidances. I mean, I would just work, work, work. I mean, to the point that I even have to tell myself now, if it's a Saturday, even if I, right now, my project I'm working on at work, I'm obsessed with it. I love it. I want to work on it all the time. I don't let myself though, because I know that part of that is me trying to avoid something, because sometimes I'm like, okay, well, what do I do? And that was hard too, realizing like, well, what do I do now that I don't go to bars and stare at people and I don't lay on my couch and watch bars and stare at people and watch Netflix? But I did do that still for a long time, because there's a time when you quit drinking that you just are trying to get through.
Well, say more about that. Like, what else did you do? Because there's a lot of different ways you can go about it. You can go to meetings, you can do all these things, but everyone picks something that works for them. And the most helpful thing I had heard was on a podcast, Seltzer Squad, a sobriety podcast, about, you know what? Treat yourself like you would a little baby. Treat yourself like a little baby Because if you can be that compassionate as you would to a baby, you'll be okay. But let yourself lay and cry and eat and whatever else a baby does. So I don't have one of those, but you let yourself do that. So talk about that.
Yeah. And I think you really helped with that because you encouraged me to do that a lot. And I at first didn't want to read a book. I didn't want to listen to the podcast because I didn't want to know. Because it was like, once you know, you can't unlearn something.
So goes back to your brain being your thing, right? Yeah. You're like, if I figure this out,
I got to deal with
it. Yeah. And I don't want to say you can't unlearn something because I've unlearned a lot of things, but I knew that I could not unknow that information.
Yeah.
So as soon as I started learning about what alcohol was doing to my brain and my body, and I would say I read Quit Like a Woman. It had to have been after, it might have been before my psychiatry appointment.
I think so.
Because there was a point where my husband stopped drinking as well, about a week into me not drinking anymore, which thank goodness, because I know we wouldn't be married now if he hadn't quit drinking. Just because I personally know that the amount we were drinking together, like there was no way we could then one of us drink and the other one not. Plus I realized about a week in that when people are drunk around me, it's a no. It's hard.
Yeah.
So I really did let myself rest and let myself, like I had whatever I wanted to drink that wasn't alcohol, I let myself drink it. If it was 20 pops a day, I knew that 20th pop was better than the third beer I would have had. And so I just let myself eat all the sugar, sleep, call into work sick if I'm not feeling well, even mentally. Like your mental health is real and that needs to be taken care of as well. So I started just letting myself, giving myself permission to rest and just exist. And figure out what I liked to do that wasn't drinking.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it helped me having you who had quit, you know, recently encouraging me to do that. You also recommended a lot of resources to me, like the podcast Seltzer Squad. I did eventually start listening to it. Once I listened to Quit Like a Woman, I was like, yeah. I'm done because I have always considered myself a feminist. And once you really frame, when you're able to really look at things big picture and you think, oh, if they keep me drunk, they can control me. No.
Yeah.
And I remember just thinking like, never again.
You know how many CEOs don't drink? Or owners of really successful businesses don't drink. It's really, really fucking hard to be exceptional at running your life, your business, being successful.
You're fucked up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I remember just, you know, even the way alcohol companies target women, just really putting a lot of that in perspective for me. I was like, wow. And I went to listen to the book again recently. And as I was listening to it, I was like, I don't feel like I need to listen to this again because so much of this I have already internalized. Whereas when I first listened to it, I remember being like, oh my gosh. And at one point, my husband had just stopped drinking, I think. And I was listening to the podcast while I was getting ready, or not the podcast, the book. And he was in the living room and I guess he could hear it or something. And he was like, that book's a little much. And I remember giving him a hard time about it because, of course, that's just what I do. And I'm like, oh, do you want to dive into why? Like, just, you know, why is it a little much? It was a little much for me before I decided it wasn't, you know. So, yeah, I think that time was just really, really important. And I remember thinking I was never going to get out of it, though. Like, I was like, when am I going to not be tired anymore? I'm supposed to start to not feel like shit all the time and I still feel like shit. And it took me, I would say, you know, you start to notice the difference, I would say within a couple weeks. I mean, you're like, you definitely start to notice it. But I wanted to get to 90 days because everything I had been reading had said 90 days is when you really, your body starts to fully recover. And I remember thinking, if I can just get to 90 days, I can see what it feels like and see if I prefer this. See if I prefer my body fully functioning. And so when I got to 90 days, I just felt so good and I had unintentionally lost weight. And prior to the quitting drinking, I was at a point in my life where I felt like shit about myself. I hated the way I looked. I was the heaviest I had ever been. Now I don't even, I have not weighed myself. I don't know. I don't care anymore because I know that I'm still, whatever I'm doing to my body now, it's way better than I was doing then. And I'm sure I'll get to a place where, you know, I want to improve my nutrition and I'm kind of getting there now, but I just allowed myself to just be how it felt convenient to be and felt comfortable because I thought, you know, if I can make this as easy for myself as possible, I can get through it.
Yeah. Well, there's no part of it that's easy. There's zero part of it that's easy, right? Like, and I have not had to go through that process like you guys did, but commend yourselves for the fact that it's really fucking hard. And the percentages of the people who fall off of the wagon and go back to drinking because the mental load and what we're really dealing with is trauma and mental health. That's the number one reason people drink, right? Is that you have a rough day and you're like, fuck it. And today in the full moon, I'm telling you.
And halfway through.
Like, I want to drink so bad. Like, a bottle of wine right now sounds great.
But before you even have that, you've probably seen five people that have said, how's your day? And you're like, oh, I need a drink. Or they've told you you need a drink. So you already have that.
It's Friday.
It's Friday.
It's Friday. Can't wait to go out to the bars tonight and drink, right? So it's so indoctrinated into our culture. And really, it's the mental health piece of it. And you touched on it so brilliantly. But I wanted just to double back and say, that's really the hard part. And so when you say, I try to make it easy on myself the other ways, what you're really saying is that I focused on my mental health. Mm-hmm. I focused on my mental health and the other shit didn't matter because I knew that my mental health was my priority in order to stay sober. And addressing that is hard as fuck.
Yeah.
And in the middle of all of this, you started joining, as we all did, this whole movement of self-discovery through human design. And you did Reiki and you went and got acupuncture. And like, so on top of everything that Chrissy just mentioned, you started to dive in even more than just therapy to figure out holistically what you can do to get to know you better on top of all of that.
Right. Yeah. And so I went to the psychiatry appointment and the psychiatrist recommended, I was on a wait list for therapy through the psychiatry office and it just like wasn't working out. It was taking forever. And I was just like, I can't really wait any longer because we're regulating my medicine, but I've got to go. And so I started therapy in like July of 2023. And that, I think just the combination of everything. And I don't even talk to my therapist about drinking. Like that's not even something that comes up. Like I never had to work through that through a therapist per se. Like I didn't, you know, I don't go in and just think like, it's so hard for me to not drink because, you know, there was so much going on that everything else is much more a priority. But the flashbacks be flashbacking because when you said, whew, man, there are times where I'll just be sitting there and drunk version of myself at a bar will pop in my head and I will just
don't even know her.
And then I'll see someone that I know from my past when I was drinking and I'll just think like they don't know me anymore. And I have to be okay with the version of me that they do know and knowing that that's just not me anymore.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, had I not been drinking, I don't know what else I would have been doing. And so I don't want to say like, I don't disregard that whole time, although I do grieve for the time that I know my brain was not making memories. I also know that I was doing what I had the capacity to do at the time.
Well, I think that's the biggest myth of being an alcoholic, honestly, is that you have to hit rock bottom and you can never get your life back. And that's when you know.
Yeah.
You're in a dark room with coffee and cigarettes, and that's when you know you're never getting it back.
Yeah.
But that's not really, especially how women experience understanding they have a problem.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's hard with that too is you imagine that everyone sees your rock bottom. And when you're in the throes of addiction, no one sees your rock bottom because you hide it because you're ashamed of it.
Yeah.
So if you're just waiting to hit rock bottom, you might end up in the hospital before you, because you're just going to keep avoiding talking about the things that you're ashamed of.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that I'm very open now, because I don't have anything to be ashamed of. Anything I've done, yeah, I did it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's embarrassing. Like, you know, got a lot of stories about embarrassing things I've done.
So glad there weren't videos back in the day. There were cell phones with cameras.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So yeah, glad. Sometimes like I'll go back on my phone, there's like a video of something, and I can't bring myself to watch it. I can't.
Sometimes I'll just delete things because I'm like, why? Or I'll watch a video and I'm like, I think the thing that's hardest for me now, there are two things. One is every now and then I'll get this feeling, and it usually when the weather starts to get nice, it's warm, or I've had a really hard day, or, you know, the government's falling apart. And I'm like, gosh, I just want to get hammered and just let loose.
Forget
like
about
I,
it.
Just let loose. Yeah. And I think, okay, I know what that means. I want to be reckless. Yeah. I want to not deal with what's in front of me. And the knowing of I'm never going to do that again is hard.
Yeah.
To go, oh yeah, I'm never going to just go out and do whatever the fuck I want, because the next day I won't remember it. And I think
you play the tape forward.
Yeah. I found so much fun in just going out and doing whatever I wanted, not thinking about what that was doing to my life, my mental health, my relationships. So that's hard sometimes. And I have to tell myself, like, no, what you really want is to avoid life, and you can't.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
Yeah.
I would say,
what do you do in those moments?
I play the tape forward. I think, okay, if I drink, then what's going to happen? Say I drink and I let loose. Like, I just think about what will happen then, and then what will happen.
Do you have other activities that you do? I mean, I know that she started crocheting like a motherfucker and hiking and, you know, like
rage like crochet moment. Yeah.
Rage walking on her mat, you know. Was there any like activities, hobbies, things that you took on that you...
I feel like I do a lot. I dabble in a lot of different things. In those moments, I really try to just sit with whatever is happening, because I also don't want to continue down the path of avoiding it. So typically I am like, no.
You write a lot though.
I do. I write a lot. I typically just, I'm very honest with myself about like, nope, that's not what you want to do. You actually, it's that feeling of that freedom feeling of like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to have fun and I'm going to like act crazy and I'm going to flirt with all the guys. You couldn't fucking pay me to go into a bar and talk to a guy that I don't know now. Yeah. I have no desire to do that. And it's not just because I'm married. It's because I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And I think about all the times that I listened to people yap that I didn't want to listen to, or entertained someone, especially a man that I didn't really enjoy being around just because I was drinking. Yeah.
Well, there's something I want to ask. So yesterday I went to an event at the organization that you work for, and I listened to the speaker talk about something her father had said about ripples, and it's all in the ripples. So can you share with us maybe someone that you feel, or you don't have to share who they are, but talk to us about that experience of someone saying, hey, I decided to look at my drinking because of you. Because I think that's another thing that really can keep us grounded in sobriety, is when we help someone else by the ripples of our actions without us maybe even knowing, and help them take a look and maybe take a different course.
Yeah. So I've had a couple people who have reached out to me and asked me questions, but there were two people specifically, one person who I know is still not drinking. And she just one day reached out to me on Instagram and was like, "Hey, why'd you quit drinking?" And I'm very open and I talked to her about it. And I've been checking in with her, and it really is, you know, for those times where I'm like, do I really want to share this? Because what if someone thinks I'm making it my whole personality, which now I don't give a shit. It's better than the other personality I had. So those things really help me really stay in what's true to myself. Because part of what that speaker also said was that when you follow the path where you feel the most passionate or creative, that's when you're actually doing what's natural to you. And that's when you have the most ripple effect. And I thought, wow, that is just, it's like she has been in, you know, some of our circles, or like, I'm like, she's doing human design work or what? Because it was a total moment, like full circle moment of just being like, yeah, that's so true. That if you are really leaning into what is true to you, it does feel natural.
Which has landed you into a blogging space.
Yeah.
Because you found out during human design that you're a projector,
mm-hmm.
which means that you're here to spread the word.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I did. I've always enjoyed writing. I think that's one thing I got back to when I stopped drinking, was I have like journals everywhere all over my house. Like I brought two with me just in case, like I have notes on my sobriety in case I forget anything. But I started right around this time I stopped drinking. So my first journal entry is from March 5th of 2023. And if I look back at it, sometimes I look back and I'm just, oh my gosh, I was like, life is chaos. I can't control my emotions. Like just all of this like dump. And it's been nice to be able to go back. And I feel sad for my younger self that I had all of this writing and I just destroyed it because I was embarrassed. Like poems that I wrote when I was like in middle school that I was like, I would never want someone to find this. This is mortifying. And it's like, that's not embarrassing. Like, why would that be embarrassing?
Yeah.
And so that makes me sad, but I'm just trying to get back to writing. So I did start a blog.
You're being vulnerable in those. And I think before you get real comfortable with vulnerability, seems real scary. So having that on paper where somebody could see it was like having your deepest, darkest secrets somewhere where somebody could just leaf through them, you know?
And I think part of the reason I was so embarrassed when I looked through them, I had some things that I was like, you know, writing poetry to like, you know, my high school boyfriend that I wasn't even supposed to have. And I look back, I'm like, oh yeah, I thought I was going to like marry this guy. It's kind of funny. But also I noticed that when I was writing in my journals, I was almost writing as if someone were going to read it. And I was trying to be this like fake version of myself that was like tough. And like, I remember looking back and being like, this is cringe because this is not at all how I was actually feeling.
Yeah.
And I remember even knowing that in my 20s and just being like, oh, burn it. So now I'm trying to write more. I would say most of my writing has really been about my own reflections on society and my own personal experience and teaching, education. I'm just trying to do it in a way that feels natural, though. So I'm not updating my blog once a week or twice a week, or, you know, it's when I feel like it. I have tons of writing that I could type out and put on there, but if it feels like work, I'm trying to not do it, because I know that once something starts to feel like work and I'm committed to it, then I'm going to be doing it all the time. And then I don't have that joy. Yeah. So I think right now I only have 3 or 4 blog posts up. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there will be times when I write more than others.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to be okay with that.
What's the name of it?
It's called Nobody Asked. It is at nobody-asked.com. And the whole theme is just like, I have a lot of opinions that no one asked for. And so I think a lot of my frustration in life has come from feeling like I have answers to things and not being asked, or trying to be heard and not being heard. And in education, I felt like, well, we're not solving any of these problems because no one's asking the right questions. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to call it Nobody Asked, because nobody fucking asked ever. And yep. So here I am just out here yapping away about things no one ever asked me.
But isn't it interesting how you went from like, go back to the months before you started, stop drinking, of like just dumping out your heart and soul to anyone that would listen when you were hammered, right? And just being like, I need to get this out, to now like finding yourself doing all of this work and writing again, and now putting it in a format that you feel like someone will ask though.
Yeah.
And I actually have these answers, and it will be sorted, and I don't want to say like, not chaotic, like
yeah, it's organized, well organized,
it's curated.
Yeah, yes.
It's curated.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And I think I've learned that I used to think with social media, I used to think that in order to be authentic, I had to tell everyone everything. Like, I just felt like if I pretend I'm okay and I'm not, that's inauthentic. And I think what I've learned is that I don't have to divulge anything to people that I don't want to. And if they choose to believe that I'm inauthentic because of that, that's their business, not mine. And I think I used to overshare in an attempt to make other people feel comfortable. And what I've realized is like, I don't need to do that. I don't need to share on social media about the struggles that I'm going through so that other people can see them and heal. If I want to do that, that's fine. But I need to heal me before I'm out here like, you know what I need to do? Tell everyone.
I was like, don't do it.
Yeah. I was like, you know what I'm going to do? Tell everybody. Like, just, you know, it's wild to think about. Like, I would be like, I'm going to post this on social media. And it's like the worst thing that's ever happened to me. It's like,
yeah, no.
No, maybe I should talk to my therapist about that first.
Integrate it. Integrate it into self before projecting it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was definitely like, there's a line for me. So
but you're still learning that as a projector, and like where that feels good and where it feels bad. And, you know, like we learn all the time about being manifesting generators and knowing when like we're doing too much because it's almost impossible to tell. I have to think that being a projector is that exact same thing. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that is something that I have to tell myself a lot.
Yeah.
And the one big thing that came out of me not drinking is realizing that I do not have to solve everyone else's problems. And my favorite question to ask myself is this your problem to solve? Because I always just felt like if someone came to me with something, I mean, it could be in the middle of your day and you're like, oh my gosh, like my shoe broke. I'm like, well, I'll go to Meijer and get you a new pair of shoes. Where are you? Like just really random putting myself out there in ways that, but I understand now I was trying to seek connection, and I'm sure I was insecure in my relationships because I wasn't being authentic in who I was because I was drunk all the time. And that showed up in me trying to be a reliable friend in other ways, or a reliable daughter or girlfriend or whatever that may be.
When you like reflect and realize you can't show up for people the way that you want to, then you start panicking and will throw anything at the situation to be like, well, at least I did this.
Yeah, I'm like, you have a new pair of shoes coming from Amazon right now. And you're like, oh, okay.
I'm like, wow, you could have just came to my
whatever
last week. Yeah. New shoes.
You're like, I'm working from home today. Yeah. Well, they're slippers.
Well, I wanted to ask, like, can you share some of the most, like, inspirational or just, like, things that through your sobriety that you were like, these people, maybe women, maybe not, have really helped get me through this time?
Yeah, so I definitely would say the author of Quit Like a Woman.
Is that Holly Whitaker?
Yes.
Yeah.
Holly Whitaker. And her book just really, really, really helped me a lot. So that's one. I would say you have been a huge support for me. And even just, like, I think, I'm like, I would have never gotten sober if you didn't get sober. And you're like, she would have. No, I wouldn't have, because again, we were the problem. Yeah. So I think that, you know, you've being a couple months ahead of where I am, it's nice to have your perspective and also to know what was helpful for me so then I can help other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the reason I try to be so open, is because I want other people to feel comfortable asking me questions like, why did you quit drinking?
Yeah.
And so I would say that my third one would be the person who reached out to me recently or a few months ago about no longer drinking herself. And I just think it's such a brave thing anytime anyone actually leans into that question of, do I have a problem or is this serving me anymore? And when someone's willing to lean into that and just try to see and figure it out rather than ignoring it, I just think that's really, really brave. And I admire that people are willing to share that with me and then say, like, you know, you inspired me to do this. I was curious about what you were posting. And a lot of people know, you know, me before not drinking. And I'm quite different. So yeah. I think, you know, I forget. It's been 2 years now, so I forget what it was like then, like those hard times where you're like, God, I want to drink. And so, you know, she reached out to me like, I'm going to my first event, my first girls' night without drinking. And, you know, the next day I checked in with her and she's like, my friends had NA drinks for me. And it was just, I just was like, I'm proud of you for telling your friends that you're not drinking. And she said she told them, hey, I'm not drinking right now. I just need you to support me in this. And I wish that I would have set that boundary.
Yeah.
And I just think it's admirable that so early on she did, because there were definitely people in my life that I had to check.
Yeah, for sure.
People that it was hard to check. Yeah. And so much of drinking is the habit of drinking. I would even realize it. This is when it got bad too. When I would get home from work and I'd crack open a beer and I'd be like, this doesn't even taste good. I don't even want this. But I want this.
Yeah.
And so it's that habit of, you know, you go to a show. I remember I went to a show early on at one of the Columbus theaters and they didn't have any NA options. And I was like white knuckling it the whole time because it's like, how can I sit through a play with no beer?
People do it all the time, turns out.
Yeah. Turns out people do a lot of things sober.
Concerts.
Yeah. Concerts, doctor's appointments, like all the things. Driving.
And sometimes I think you just have to give up certain events if they're not as enjoyable, like going to the barns.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, it's okay if suddenly these events are not as enjoyable to you. I don't love going to sporting events. I would much rather sit in the comfort of my house, mostly because I don't like sports that much. But if somebody wants to go, I love baseball, though. Mm-hmm. Take me to a Clippers game. I'll sit there all day in the sunshine.
Yeah.
And pop peanuts open and be a happy little lark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But don't take me to an Ohio State football game when it's 28 degrees outside and snowing.
Right.
Fuck you. Don't let me do that. I'll sit at home and you can watch football while I nap on the couch. Right. Totally. Like finding some ways to understand that you don't have to go to all the same things. The same things might not have the same desire that they used to, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And finding the other things and ways around it that you enjoy.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this recently. It brought me back to not everything is for everybody.
That's right.
Yeah. And I just have to realize that now there are things that are not for me anymore, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And if at one time it was for me,
right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Closing. Maybe not so cool.
Yeah. Well, we really appreciate you being vulnerable. I think sobriety, the topic, is so important. And there's so much content out there for, you know, maybe people who have hit rock bottom, or men, or moms specifically.
Or people that are within the Christian faith.
Totally. Those types of content are really available for the most part, what I found through my own research. Mm-hmm. But until I found the Seltzer Squad podcast, which they don't record anymore, I had never just heard women my age, childless, who just said, it's not that a 9-month period happened where I was forced not to drink. I had to tell myself every day, bitch, don't drink. Mm-hmm. And that was hard. Mm-hmm. And so I just am really grateful to have friends who have also experienced this, who are willing to share just the, mm-hmm. I'm in my 30s and just did it because I knew I had to for my well-being. And that's so mm-hmm. important.
And I think we've been a really good support system for each other, and that it's been 2 years now for me, a little over two for you, and neither of us have had a drink at all. And I know that that doesn't happen for most people who quit. Like, most right. people try to quit drinking multiple times. So I would also encourage you, if you've tried to quit drinking before, it's okay to go back to not drinking if you
yep.
keep trying.
Had a relapse. You know, keep it's trying. And I think there's so much shame that surrounds a relapse, and even calling it a relapse, it's like, but I also decided early on that a relapse was highly probable and I was not going to yep. beat myself up.
And by the way, a lot of that happens at year 7.
Interesting
fun fact. So, you know, these people think by that time they're over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm over it, cure myself, I'm fine. So, you know, like, just, it's an everyday choice.
Yep.
Knowing that it could happen is not shameful, but just saying every day I pick myself, and if I fall down, I'm going to pick myself right back up.
Yep.
So, well, thank you for tuning in today. Please, if this episode resonates with you or someone you know, give it a share, like, comment. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Spotify, YouTube, where we have video and audio on YouTube now, and also iHeart.
And if you want to check out my blog, you don't even have to ask. nobody-asked.com. And if you want to share it with your friends, if there's something that resonates with you, I would really appreciate it.
Love it.
If not, I'll just keep writing for myself.
Nobody.
Which is where it's
nobody asked. I decided this is not a job.
Nobody asked. Thank you, guys. Love you.
Love
you.